Shall we give her a very warm welcome? Debbie, go on, tell us what's his name.
His name is Yaku. He's a South African. So yeah, it's very exciting.
Right, for you, he's going to have an empty wallet after next Friday. And are you getting married in Yorkshire?
We're actually getting married in Henley. I live in Henley now, dear. Rowing Central. So,
right,
yeah.
Okay. And what does he? Is he a rower?
No, he was a personal trainer for a number of years, so he does get sport, but he's only rowed once. That was in a boat with me. I took him out rowing, and then. Yeah, he didn't like the fact that I could row better than him, so I'm rowing that
once. All right. Oh, well, so congratulations for a week tomorrow. And trust it goes really. And honeymoon, where are you going? Anywhere interesting?
A friend has donated a house in Poole for us for a week.
So you're going down south.
South, sorry.
This
I know.
Is dreadful. But you do come from the north,
I
don't
you? I do come from the north. I am northern.
And which county? It's not the L word, is it?
It's the best county. It's Yorkshire, of course.
Oh, right. No, I love to drop the word Yorkshire in every talk. It just sort of raises the level of cultural sophistication. So in fact, we grew up both very, very close to each other. The town where you live is?
It's Guiseley.
And Guiseley's quite famous for one or two things apart from you.
Yeah, Harry Ramsden's was the original
fish and chips
shop.
Yes, yes.
And Sutty and Sweep came from Guiseley.
Harry Corbett came from Guiseley, that's right, great. And if you've ever seen Moon woolen products, you know them? Oh, they're gorgeous. Anyway, I've left in my will that I don't want any flowers, but I want my coffin to be covered with a moon blanket. And that's got to be done. Anyway, we won't go into that. It's not about me. Rowing in Yorkshire, we haven't exactly got a River Thames, have we?
We haven't. It's not really... It's not really long straight rivers, it's more rapids and bends. Yeah.
Yes. So how did you get into rowing?
Oh, again, like, I mean, I came from a really sporty family, so I loved doing sport as a youngster. You know, my dad, he used to run lots of marathons, and my mum would potter on a bike and run. So myself and my brother, I've got a younger brother, 1 year younger, and we were very much encouraged as youngsters growing up to be active and get outside and do sport and use our energy up. And I loved sport because that's what I did with my, I did that with my dad, and I did it at school. And I used to watch the Olympics, and I used to think, wow, they're superhuman. It was like something that I watched on television, like almost another world away. But I used to think, I really love sport. I wonder if one day I'd ever be, you know, good enough to be able to represent my country. So I tried lots of different sports at school. Running was my first love because that's what I did with my dad. And then I got involved in the judo team, went to school in quite a rough area, so my parents were keen that we could look after ourselves, so I got involved in the judo club. And then, you know, between myself and my brother, I was the one with that competitive drive. I always wanted to be racing, I always wanted to be competing, I really enjoyed that. So I ended up in the British junior judo team, and actually as part of our fitness we used the rowing machine. And at the time, it was like this new piece of equipment, which was something different. And I really enjoyed it. I mean, anyone who's rowed here or does row now, I mean, we know, don't we? They're torture machines. But when I first started using one, it was something new. It was something different. And I quite enjoyed it. And then someone just came up to me one day in the gym and said, oh, are you a rower? I was like, rower? No. I mean, honestly, I literally like, what is that? You know, I'd never seen it on the television. I'd never been in a paddle boat on a river or on a lake. I used this rowing machine thing for fitness. But because I'd done sport all my life, and I was 17 at the time now, I'd done sport all my life, I was naturally quite fit and strong. So on the rowing machine, I was pulling good times. And he said, you should go on a rowing course. And it kind of just started from there.
And somebody spotted you, obviously, and felt,
my rowing course was across the roads, Tideway Scullers rowing course. Spotted by a guy called Alec Hodges, a total legend, brilliant, lovely, lovely guy, just a real heart for teaching people to row, and he said, you need to take up rowing, and really encouraged me. I joined a club back in Bradford on the River Aire, 500 metre stretch, so basically, got good at turning around, and that is pretty much it. And we had a bend in that, a little bend as well, and even in racing I couldn't go around, but anyway, I could talk about all my rowing anyway.
And when you were at the peak of your rowing career, how many hours a day were you training?
So a full-time training for us would be 2 or 3 times a day. So twice in the morning and then a third session in the afternoon. So our 2 rowing sessions in the morning would be about 1.5 hours, 1 hour and 40 minutes on the water, both sessions. And then the afternoon session would be in the gym, either on the rowing machine or doing weights or doing core stability. And actually, once even in the junior system, once I got into the junior team, our training was, you know, often twice a day towards the end, and then transitioning into under-23s. But again, I wasn't a natural to start with, and I didn't go into that kind of full program to start with either. And I spent my first week pretty much swimming most of the week. It's such a technical sport. Those of you.
Well, it's very low in the water, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's,
and you're just so unbalanced. You know, the single, if you learn in the single, is from the door to probably the end of that table long, and then this wide. So it's just so unstable in the water. So I found it quite difficult to start with. And you know, even after 3 months of putting in lots of energy, lots of effort, you know, the coach back in Yorkshire came up to me and said, "Debbie, pat on the head. Know you're working hard at school, but you're a bit keen. You know, you're coming down all the time training, and you know, realistically, you're not going to be much more than an average."
Well, we
like
to tell it as it is, you know, up north.
It's well, gutted, you know, and almost stopped at that point. But again, you know, God just placed various people in my path to keep me walking down that route, and obviously, I continued and got a different coach, and it kind of went from there, really.
Amazing. So 3 to 4.5 hours a day actually training. And did you have to be careful of your diet? Were you eating so many protein pumps a day? Or
yeah, so lots of people, I mean, I am retired now, and lots of people say, "Oh, you can eat what you want now." And I'm like, no, that is the opposite. I couldn't, used to be able to eat what I want because you burn it all off, you know, in all of that training. So actually, you know, I would eat 5,000 to 6,000 calories a day on my full-time training program. You know, we would be drinking 8 to 10 litres of fluid and water and hydration because you're burning it off and you're sweating it out. And actually, obviously, it's a balanced diet, but just lots of it, which was great. But I have to can't do that now.
No, you're not rowing at all at the moment.
So I do a little bit to help out, but it's not regularly every day.
Okay. Now, you come from quite a strong Christian background, don't you?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I grew up in a Christian home. My grandparents were missionaries in Africa, in Liberia. So, you know, from birth, I was, you know, I've been at church on Sundays, and I went to Sunday school through church. And I guess if you'd have asked me when I was probably in my early teens, if you'd have asked me, you know, "Are you a Christian? Do you believe in God?" I would have said, "Well, yes, I go to church on Sundays, and my grandparents are missionaries." And at that age, I used to think it was automatic. Mm. But when I joined our youth group at church and started to listen a bit more and understand about who Jesus was and why he came and the life he lived, I realized that actually, you know, I don't measure up. And God creates each one of us with real value and purpose. And I knew that. I knew that bit because I knew that, you know, I knew that God had blessed me with abilities to do sport and passion to do sport, and I was quite happy just to take that and get on with life and use it and do my sport. But actually, first and foremost, God wants a relationship with us, and I realized that I didn't have a relationship with him. I was just taking what life offered and, you know, getting on with my rowing life and sports life, and realized that actually, of course, you know, if I'm offered a relationship with the Creator, then that's a no-brainer. As a 15-year-old, I was like, how do I do it? And, you know, realised that I needed to, you know, say sorry for living my own life, for not acknowledging God in any way, and for that relationship being broken, and invited Jesus into my life. And that was the point onwards where I would say I, you know, started my Christian walk.
Was that at a particular event or anything like that? Do you remember where it was? Was it at home or...?
It was at our youth group.
It was in the youth group.
Yeah, it was at our youth group, and our youth group leader said, you know, if you'd like to become a Christian, then you can pray this prayer. So we wrote the prayer out, you know, just as I kind of just described there.
Yes.
And I took that home, and I said, yes, you know, I want to have a relationship with God.
And had you understood that, you know, I don't know, that Christ had died for you, that he'd risen from the dead, and you need to, as it were, repent? And had you understood these things at that age?
Again, in my 15-year-old, you know, way, and that, you know, actually, God knows us. He knows that, you know, that we, none of us can say that we're perfect with no wrong thought or wrong deed. And God knows not only our actions, but he knows our hearts. And, you know, that separates us from him. And God could have just left us where we were and say, oh, well, never mind. But actually, you know, he came down to the earth in human form, in Jesus, to be able to give us that opportunity because he loved us so much. And for me, you know, that was amazing.
Absolutely.
And, you know, yeah.
Okay, so you go into sport and rowing in particular as a Christian.
Yeah.
Now, it's not particularly a Christian environment, is it?
The sports world, I was one of the only Christians in the team when I first joined the rowing team. And also the sports world, it can be a real selfish world. Everyone kind of fighting for their place and fighting for themselves to get in the boat. I mean, in the team, even for 7 months of the year, we're actually competing against each other to get into the team in the first place. So it's a very strange environment to be in. But, you know, for me, I knew that God had, you know, given me those abilities and the passion and the opportunities to do sport. And I was extremely competitive. You know, I wanted to go out and win medals. I wanted to represent my country. But also, I didn't want to waste the opportunities of life in front of me. I wanted to embrace life and make the most of that. But as a Christian, I wanted to do that in the right way. So, you know, I wanted that to be honoring to God and not just for myself. But to be thanking him for the gifts and the opportunities that he'd given me. So, you know, in that sense, it's also part of, you know, how I did my sport and how I cope with the ups and downs and how I treated others was actually a really important thing. And, yeah, to start with, nobody knew I was a Christian, but I got interviewed by...
Yeah, I was going to say, how did it become
Well, I got interviewed for the Regatta magazine, which is a magazine that goes out to every single row in the country. By James Cracknell, who was one of the top rowers at the time. And because I'd burst onto the scene, so having come, you know, I could talk for hours, I'm from Yorkshire, but, you know, having come last in all the novice races and last at trials, I then, you know, as I progressed, I then kind of burst onto the junior scene. So I got interviewed for this magazine, mentioned what I did at weekends, mentioned that I was a Christian, and that I did things, you know, helped out with the church in the week, and not thinking that he'd put this in at all. Next thing I know, this interview has gone out to every single row in the country saying that I was a Christian. And, you know, when I was a junior, I was so shy. I would not really talk to anyone. My coach said, you know, we'd gone a two-hour journey and he'd ask me loads of questions and all he would get out of me is, yeah, okay, no, right. And so this was actually quite daunting to start with. But actually, it ended up being such a blessing because people often asked me questions about it, wanted to know what I thought, what I believed, and it gave people opportunity to do that. And it taught me as well that, you know, don't ever underestimate what God is doing in someone else's life and in someone else's heart. And you know, I was in rowing for a purpose, to use my abilities, to use the talents that I was given, but also to be a blessing for others around me and to learn. And my kind of, you know, we're all on life journeys, aren't we? We're all on different paths in life, and there's ups and downs along the way. And in those ups and downs in sport, you know, God taught me so much.
Well, we'll talk about this in a moment. And leave the Olympics for the moment, but other successes. I know naturally you don't want to brag, but what? Tell us some of the successes you've had before we come on to the Olympics.
In terms of rowing?
Rowing, yes. Yeah.
So, well, I won the World Championships 5 times, so twice as an under-23 and 3 times as a senior. And we have World Cup seasons throughout that, so multiple World Cup medals. And then Henley Royal Regatta, which is a big event within the rowing world for schools, universities, internationals, all sorts of, everyone in the rowing world, really. I've won Henley Royal Regatta 3 times, twice in the quad, and once in my single as well. So
that all sounds pretty good. So let's come on to the Olympics. How many Olympics have you attended?
Well, does it count if I support? So I was a spare in Sydney. Spare's not a nice word, is it? I was a reserve in Sydney. I competed in Athens.
Spare, does that stand for scraping the barrel sort of thing?
No, it's excellent support person, just in case you needed.
Okay.
I represented in Athens and Beijing and London, and then I went out to Rio to support. So can I count that as 5?
Yes,
I can't,
you can.
Really.
Yeah,
four,
go on.
Really,
well, it's 5 more than me. all right, so let's go through it. You went first of all to Sydney.
Yeah, so again, that was a really tough time in my life because, you know, we make our life plans, don't we? And for me, as an 18-year-old, I had a life plan. My life plan was to row full-time for 2 years, go to the Sydney Olympics, and then become a veterinary surgeon. That was my life plan, had it all sorted. So I did juniors that 1 year, in that 1 year when I was 18. So I left home, moved from Yorkshire down south, didn't know anyone, moved away from my friends and family, trained full-time for 2 years. and I didn't make it. I actually came second on the race off for the single, which meant that I didn't get selected. And at that point in my life, I thought, God, why am I even here? What a waste of 2 years. It wasn't my plan. You know, I wanted to make the Olympics and that was my aim, but I hadn't done it. So in my head, I just thought, I've totally wasted 2 years of my life. And actually, it took my coach to pick me back up at the time and say, look, Debbie, you have trained hard for 2 years. You have improved. You're a really good standard. And actually, you've still got other things this year. You can do under 23 World Championships. You can do Henley Royal Regatta. But in my head, I hadn't been interested in doing those. I wanted to go to the Olympics, and that was all I was interested in. But actually, I ended up doing those races that year, under-23s in my single and Henley Royal Regatta, and I actually ended up winning both those races. And it's not about the winning, but actually what it was about is the fact that I had an amazing summer. And I actually went to Sydney as a spare, and I looked back at the end of that year and I thought, wow. If you ask me now, which would I have done, gone to the Olympics in Sydney or done those events, I would have done those events. Because actually, that was where I was up to. That was where I was at. And I had most amazing gear.
But in a rower's mind, the Olympics overshadows everything.
It is the pinnacle yeah. of a sport. But I wasn't ready and I wasn't at the point. And looking back again, I can talk for hours, but like so many different people placed in my path and so many different, you know, I could look back. Sometimes it's only in hindsight, isn't it? We look back and we can see where we've come and how God's like led us through
so
different things.
Sydney, so. And next was Athens.
Yeah, so then Athens, of course I carried on. So my life plan was 2 years rowing and then become a veterinary surgeon. I ended up rowing for 15 years and becoming a prison officer, totally different. So Athens was next. Again, you know, real commitment to that four-year cycle. You know, the world championships are important, but we commit to four-year cycles. Got selected for Athens, which was amazing, with three other girls who are still some of my best mates. They're all coming to my wedding next week. They're just like my sisters. And I'd never medalled senior-wise before, so that was my first senior medal. And again, Athens, the home of the game, home of the Olympics. It was such a special place to win that medal, and particularly with those three girls. And the Brits are such good supporters. I mean, there's just seas of British flags everywhere. It was, and our friends like jumped the barriers, swam out, and gave us flags and hats and all sorts. So it was a very, very amazing experience. Yeah.
And what did you come?
We came second to Germany. Yeah, Germany were the top nation at the time.
Annoying. But anyway, so you got silver. Have you got the medal with you?
I have got that with me. Which again, I'm happy for people to have a look at afterwards. They're solid silver, so they're
really
heavy,
aren't they? Yes,
they are heavier than they look.
I'm sure people would expect me to wear this, wouldn't they? It's but I won't. But there it is, and some Greek on the back.
Yeah, ancient Greek on the back. Yeah, and it's amazing. All bobbled. It's been through hundreds of hands now. Yeah,
wonderful. So is this very precious to you?
I would say that was one of my highlights of my career. Yeah. One of them definitely, yeah.
Okay, so from Athens to Beijing. Yeah. Now, to get a silver in Athens was fantastic, wasn't it?
It was great, absolutely great, yeah.
But you're going to Beijing for the gold.
Absolutely, so our mentality for that next 4 years was gold medal standard. So gold medal standard training, gold medal standard eating, gold medal standard recovery, gold medal standard everything, you know. And
you're working for 2 years solidly.
4 years. Four years.
For a what? 6-7 minute race.
Yeah. So by the time we got to Beijing, that's 11 years of my life for 1 6-minute race. I'm an Olympic champion. You know, so and again, we were world champions. I wasn't in the boat in 2005. The boat was world champion in 2005. I was back in it for 2006 and 2007. We were world champions those two. So 3 years being world champions in the run-up to Beijing, obviously huge expectation, really, you know, believing that we could get out there, we could come home Olympic champions.
Right. So, Debbie, do you pray before a race?
I always pray before a race.
Do you pray that the other boats would sink?
If there was Christians in every boat and they all prayed the same thing, we'd have some problems.
It'd be great television, though.
You know, for me, you know, I would always pray that I could just do my best and absolutely just race as well as I could.
So you go through all the heats and you get to the final in Beijing.
Yeah,
so
we won all our races in the run-up to the final. Yeah.
How did you feel when you went? You know, you have to. We're going to watch it in a minute.
I mean, before we put it on, you know, warming up for Olympic final is such a surreal experience because, like I say, for this race, I trained pretty much full-time for 11 years. But then you get, you know, you're boating for your Olympic final and you're boating obviously where the finish line is, so there's like 30,000 people of noise, cheering, national anthems going on, Olympic music playing. It's just so busy. The atmosphere is amazing. But then you kind of get into that, a bit nervous. You go on to warm-up lake, and by the time you finish your warm-up and you're at the top, it's like no noise. It's just the nervous breathing of athletes. It's all you can hear. So you're sat on the start line, and you just, you know, you do your final, you know, that's a good race, you know, and whatever you say in your boat. And you're just sat. It's such a surreal experience, because I always look down the course, but it's like, oh, no more practice. No, this is not a test to run. It's just so strange because
you
rarely have those.
And your heart is pounding,
moments.
Is it?
It is, but again, you know, my role in the boat was to. So you have different roles in the boat. I would sit at two, so that was from the. So if you add your looking, I would be the third along, but I'd called number two, and I'm the one that does all the chatting. I don't know why, but I'm the one that does all the chatting. So that's just the place where you. So I have to make sure my crew is calm. That I've got keywords that I will say that we already have. Decided what we're going to be saying to get us in the right frame of mind, the right mindset, just focused. And you're literally on that start line, all you're thinking about is the first three strokes, because that's all you can do to start with, and then everything kind of flows from that. So you've got to get the first few right. So it's just real focused.
And does it seem like an eternity waiting there?
Yeah, and also it's just because you're waiting for that beeper, but you've got a light and you've got a beeper, and obviously light travels faster than sound. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, so we watch the light. So we don't wait for the sound, we're watching the light. So we're trying to react together. So it's just, yeah.
Amazing.
It's just,
so
yeah,
you're racing against, who's in this race altogether?
So our main opposition from this, we had been beaten this season at a World Cup regatta by America and China. So Germany, America, China were our main rivals, yeah.
Okay. So we're going to watch it. You're going to talk us through
it. Yeah, it's just little clips. So you just go, it goes quickly through each 500 metres. But again, we're a strong crew, so we expected to get out in front, and we wanted to stay out in front, basically.
And which of the...
So we're in the middle.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's Germany, and they've been Olympic champions since women's rowing's been in the Olympics. Germany were the Olympic champions every single. That was us, me, just looking around there from two. Ready and focused. China. Home turf for them.
Right.
That's it. So again, yeah, we were a really strong crew, so we hope to get out into the lead. We'll show the 500 metre marker, which is a quarter way in a minute. We just snuck out slightly in front, about half a boat length in front of China and Germany there, but half a boat length, it's not quite clear water, and you really want to have clear water to feel confident and comfortable. But this middle of the race, we're a really strong crew. This is us here. Going down the middle of the race again, holding that half length from China and Germany, but China just still right there, right with us. Germany just slipping back a tiny bit. It's halfway. You can see the coaches all following us down the barrier. I'm surprised they don't all fall off.
Are they on the bikes? Yes,
they're on the bikes. So again, here we're feeling confident, we're feeling strong. Obviously there's pain at this point, but you don't acknowledge it. Coming into the last 500 metres, and then this is, you know, 30,000 people spectating. The noise is incredible. Even I can't hear what I'm shouting and saying at this point, but again, the Chinese crowd are going absolutely mad. And China just chunking back slowly but surely towards us, but absolutely still think we can get through. They just passed us here in the final stage, the last 10 seconds of the race, basically the last 15 seconds of the race. They just come past us and come through. But even at this point, we're still going for the line to win, and they've just come right through now. Yeah.
Now, did I see an outboard motor on the Chinese boat?
And again, until the second you cross that line, you still believe that you can do it. Because as soon as you start to think that you can't, like the body will react to that, like subconsciously, and your head will go down and the body will respond. So you can see here, I mean, our pictures on the podium were terrible. We need to get them redone. We just look so sad. But, you know, for us... Yeah.
But you see, this is what's so interesting. So you get silver in Athens, yeah, and you're delighted.
Yeah.
You get silver in Beijing, yeah, and you're gutted.
Yeah, just had that expectations upon ourselves. We wanted to go that one better. You know, that's the kind of the mentality of a sports person in a way. You just aiming high and wanting to, you know, be the best in the world. And that was, you know, a big part of our motivation. And until, you know, when we crossed the line, you know, no words could console us at the time. Our interviews with Steve Ryder and John Inverdale and Steve Redgrave, we were just we could hardly speak. We're just holding each other up, and you know, really, we really ought to get the pictures redone. It was, but you know, looking back on that race, I'm still gutted we didn't become Olympic champions. It would have been, you know, that would have been amazing. Mm. But actually, we had a great race. We didn't do anything wrong. We made no mistakes. We went, you know, profile wise, you want to go faster in that last 500, and we did. It's just that Chinese went faster than we went faster.
How had they had sweet and sour sauce or something? What? How had they done
you know,
it?
They're just, you know, they're a good crew. They're a strong crew. They obviously were just rowing a bit better than we were, and you know, they just went faster than we went faster. And at the end of the day, that is sport. There's, you can train for 11 years, and there are no guarantees.
Amazing.
That someone might make a mistake or get injured or ill, or someone's better than you on the day. That is sport.
Now here you are, what, 8 years later, you're talking about it. What about the other girls? How have they reacted?
Again, you know, things like that affect us all in different ways. And as an elite sports person, it's very easy for sport to become your identity. So for many sports people, you know, if they're winning in racing, they can feel like they're winning in life and they're great as a person. And then if they're losing or injured, they can feel like they're failing and they're a failure as a person, because if their identity is in their sport, that it becomes who they are. But we know, don't we, it's not who they are, but it can very easily become that. And for me, you know, as a Christian, that is something that has helped me maintain stability and perspective, because, you know, my identity is not as a rower. Rowing is something that I do, but actually my identity is in being a child of God. And, you know, the world's view and opinion of us can change from day to day, can't it? From moment to moment, depending on, you know, how we're doing, how they're doing, you know, what's going on in the world, in work, in family, in life. But actually, you know, in sport, you can go from hero to zero overnight in a result or in an injury.
But one of the girls, I think, totally devastated,
yeah,
wasn't
one of
she?
The girls was totally broken from that and never really came back. She did scrape into London, but, you know, never really recovered from that. She felt like she was a total failure as a person, which is not true, is it? I mean, you know...
Did you ask God, why did you allow this? Did it lead you to question your faith at all?
I think as, you know, maybe at the beginning of my career, it might have, but as I've... kind of as we walk in life, we mature, don't we, in all different ways and aspects. And you know, at that point, I knew that it wasn't all about results, that you know, God's view and opinion of me doesn't change depending on whether I'm winning or losing, and that actually that is sport, and you know, there is no guarantees. And you know, for me, I know that in ups and downs, that's just inevitable in life. And actually, in disappointment, you learn so much as well. And actually, I learn in lots of different ways in disappointments to rely on God. And actually, that the sport isn't my be-all and end-all. It's not my whole world and life. It's something that I'm doing in this season of life, but actually, seasons of life change. Mm. And, you know, for me, you know, when I pass away, I'm not going to take my medals and successes and achievements with me. No. You know, in the light of eternity,
it's what
my
you've done
faith
with Jesus.
Is the most important thing.
Your medal, have you got it from Beijing?
I have got my medal
now,
from Beijing.
Is this very precious to you?
I can know where this line of questioning is going. It is very precious to
oh,
me.
Is it? Right.
It is.
How many of
it
these
is.
Particular medals have you had?
So I did lose my original medal. And I got a replacement, and then I did actually lose that one.
Yeah,
so this is my second replacement.
Your head. So you've lost two silver medals,
and this is the third one. I do take them round in my defence. I do take them round all the time, like to events, to schools. The first time, it was, I think it just fell out of my pocket. I was running for a taxi after being at a big schools event, and I normally keep them in a sock. In my Athens sock and Beijing sock. So it would have fallen out and, you know, I wouldn't have heard it. Second time I was going all around the country, and it's one of those things where I started with two and I ended with one, but when you don't know where it is, you just think, oh, it must be in my other pocket or it must be in the car. So you don't look at the time. So, yeah, that's not a good excuse, is it?
No, but well, Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, same thing happens, so fair enough. Now, quickly, we haven't got that much time. Let me see. Yeah, and it's got jade on the back,
it
hasn't it?
It has Chinese
beautiful.
Jade in the back,
beautiful,
yeah.
Beautiful, yeah. London. You were in the team again.
Again, yeah. And again, London, in my mind, brilliant. London, great one to finish on. Olympic champion on my home turf, sweet. That's what I'm aiming for. And, you know, so that was our aim for the next 4 years. But again, lots of injuries that year, my injuries in the run-up to London. And actually, we kind of scraped into the final, and getting into the final for us was actually a huge achievement.
Right, I'm going to stop you there. Before the final, of course, the Olympic torch.
Before the final, yes. So I had the opportunity to carry, I was nominated to carry Olympic torch. Again, I'm pass this around at the end if people haven't
and
seen
one. And I can
one.
See you've really looked after it. Those dents were in the original, were they?
So this has got 8,000 holes to represent the 8,000 miles that travel the country. And also 8,000 people carried a torch. The three sides represent that the games were held three times. And
in London, yeah.
In London, yeah. And I used to think Olympians were superhuman. Well, we are, because I've got a big hand dent at the bottom, which is, I'm sorry, that's not true. I did actually shut this in my car door by mistake. So that is why it's got a dent at the bottom.
What was it like? Where did you carry it?
Well, I was supposed to carry it in Yorkshire, but our training camp dates got changed, so I ended up carrying it on the wettest, windiest day ever in Morecambe, on the other side, Roger, on the other side.
Yeah, we don't like to use the name, we don't swear in church, but it is the other county, yes.
But, it was amazing, even though the weather, thousands of people still came out. I mean, although I only got to run with it for about 600 metres, so not far, but I decided that I would run as physically slowly as I possibly could to make it last. So I was zigzagging the road, high-fiving the kids. But I looked quite silly because it was live-cammed, and I was jogging around, high-fiving all the kids, and the two security guards were walking alongside me. Embarrassing, really. But it was cool. It was
great moment. And then, so you got into the final in London. So you should have won?
No.
Are we not going to have a third medal?
With our preparation, it was for us. But almost the biggest pressure I've ever been under, because if we had not made our final, we would have been the only British rowing team in our rowing team that would not have made the final, and that actually was such huge pressure. But actually, in our repercharge, we had the most incredible race. It's probably the hardest race I've ever had in my life. And normally, I would call for us to be winding for the line, in the last 500, if we want to be going for it, last 750. I struggle with that. I'm a last 250 girl, but we were in last place by 500 gone, and I just knew we had to call. I called going for the line for 500 gone, and we basically just took 250 metres at time. I did not know how we were going to side five to the end, but we did. And it was the craziest race ever, but yeah.
But you made it.
We made it to the final. And yeah, we had.
So go on, what was it like? Talk us through quickly what happened, because it's quite moving, really.
Again, in the final, you start on the start line, and we said, right, all those races, that's all passed. Doesn't matter where we ranked as a crew. We're starting level. We're going to just go for it.
And was China there?
China was there.
Was Germany there?
Yeah, America, Ukraine. Okay. All the big countries, and New Zealand hadn't got through the rep, and we set off absolutely, actually with real confidence. Again, we'd managed to reset, real confidence. But when you're racing, you're not only at the edge of your physical ability, but you're at the edge of your technical ability as well. So, and because we'd missed quite a bit of training and kind of drilledness as a crew, and we in the first 200 meters we caught a massive crab. So for those of you who are not rowers, it's where the blade gets caught under the water and it just gets sucked. It's like a handbrake, and it almost brings you to a standstill. And that happened in the first 200, and that was tough. We didn't recover from that. And actually, that was a different kind of race, because as an athlete, if you've been beaten, it's hard, it's tough, but you can process it. If someone else has been better than you on the day, there's a way of processing that and then wanting to move on. But if something's happened and you haven't been able to perform to your best, you've not been able to show yourself, and that is hard. That is harder.
Which was more upsetting, London or Beijing?
Oh, that's tough. That is tough. So at the time,
really,
in the moment, Beijing, but I think to process-wise, London was tough because we hadn't been able to show what we're capable of, and it was my last games. Mm. I almost changed my mind wanting to carry on, but I really wanted to make my decision before the games whether I carried on, because I wanted it to be life dependent and not emotionally led. I didn't want my carrying on in the sport to be just because, I wanted to win those medals. Actually, I wanted it to be the right thing for life. So I didn't ever want to be swayed by results. So I always made the decision before the game. So I stuck with that pretty much. Yeah.
And you get married a week tomorrow, so when you have twin boys or girls, you've got to come to Yorkshire to have them.
Yeah, they're
remember
gonna
that.
They're going to be in a double. Yeah, absolutely. Be in a double.
Would you encourage them to become rowers?
Rowing has been such a friendly world to me. Again, I could talk for hours about that, but it's been a kind spot to me. I've had so many people that have helped me out. It's hard. It's hard at any level. It is such a time commitment. So any of you who row, you're hardcore. And you know, it is a time consuming sport, but I've loved it. So I would always just encourage, if I'm blessed with children, then I would encourage them to do what they love doing and what they enjoy doing. Be active, be fit, but you know, take up something that they are passionate about and want to do. So whatever.
Now
that
time's
is.
Gone, but I do want to ask one or two other questions quickly. What are you doing now? What work are you doing?
So now I work for a charity called Christians in Sport. So my role is to mentor other Christian athletes, encouraging them in their sport and in their faith. And actually, Christians in Sport supported me for 15 years while I was in the rowing team. So it was a real blessing.
So you're not just working with rowers, you work with all
different sports. Yeah, I've had to learn about other sports. I have no knowledge before that. Yeah.
If I could offer you, I don't know, 2-3 goals, all you've got to do is renounce your Christian faith, say no to Jesus. Would it be tempting at all?
No, not at all. You know, Jesus is the most important decision I ever made. You know, we all have a decision to either live life with God or live life without God. And that is the most important decision that I ever made in inviting Jesus into my life. You know, like I said before, it's, you know, I'm not going to take my medals and the successes and achievements when I pass. You know, my faith takes me into living, you know, in eternity with Jesus. But it's not just for then, it's for now. Every single day, now it has an impact on my life and makes a difference in life.
You see, you don't think it's just because your parents, your grandparents were Christians, you've sort of been brainwashed into it and it's real to you.
As a 15-year-old, I realised it wasn't automatic. It's not something we can earn or do of our own self. It's a free gift. Given to us, and you know, we're just asked to accept it. God created us. He wants a relationship with us. He wants to love him back.
And if somebody was here, I don't know the folk here, but if somebody was here and said, look, Debbie, I'm not a Christian, give me a good reason why I should become one, what would you say?
You've got absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. Ask questions. There's nothing wrong with having questions. We're always learning as a Christian. You know, we're always learning in our walk. We're always learning more. We're always asking things along the way, and God is always teaching us. So ask the questions. Ask, you know, friends who are Christians. Ask God Himself. Investigate into it. You've got absolutely nothing to lose.
Debbie, thank you very much. We're going to have a bit of a break, the refreshments, etc. I think we're going to have some music as well. But you'll stay around and chat and sign the book or the leaflet or whatever.
Don't
go off with the medal. She can't pay for a third. Debbie Flood, thank you very much.